from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. This is 30 Laps with Dick. I'm Richard Lyon. Welcome. What's in store this week? Well, let's find out. Hey, they laughed at Wilbur when he said he could make Orville fly back in Kitty Hawk in 1903. They were hesitant about Neville's chute and some of his airship calculations in 1925. Yes, that Neville chute. Read Slide Rule. He's a smart man. It's a good book. And what's this about a jet engine? They asked Sir Frank Whittle in 1928. Well, where the heck is this going? And what's it got to do with motoring? This week, 30 Laps. Well, we've got our very first flying car that's been certified by the FAA. That's where it's going this week. Plus, flying minis and daredevil drivers and the chips that help us see. Flying cars, daredevils, chips, but no fish. All ahead of us this week in 30 Laps. So let's have a look, shall we? From Tuesday, February 16, the Daily Mail, and it's written by Dan Avery. The future's here. The world's first flying car that travels at 100 mile an hour at altitudes of 10,000 feet is cleared for takeoff by the FAA, and a full air-road hybrid is set for 2022. The company received a special light sport aircraft airworthiness certificate from the FAA. It has a 27-foot wingspan with wings that fold up to fit into one car garage. Pilots can now purchase flight-only models which run on gas or aircraft fuel. A full road air hybrid model of the two-seater is planned for next year. Traditional owners will need both a driver's license and a sport pilot's certificate in order to take the best advantage. The dream of flying a car just got one step closer to reality after the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, granted approval to a hybrid ground air vehicle that can soar at speeds of 100 miles an hour. The Terrafugia Transition received a special light sport aircraft airworthiness certificate from the agency, giving it green light for takeoff. And as we said, you're going to need a pilot's airworthy certificate and a driver's license if it still needs to meet road safety standards. Ultimately, drivers will be able to convert from flying to driving in less than a minute, taking off and landing at small airports or the highway. Terrafugia hopes to have production and approvals of the two-seater hybrid complete for 2022. For those interested in taking it for a spin, we'll need, as we said, the driver's license and your sports pilot's certificate. Must be important, that's the third time they've mentioned it. Chinese-owned Terrafugia has been overly optimistic about delivering a roadable aircraft, as they call it, a small plane with retractable wings that can drive on roads and take to the open sky. At first promised, the Transition would be for sale in 2015, then 2018, then 2019. But Terrafugia General Manager Kevin Colburn raised and praised his team's efforts during an extremely challenging pandemic year. Our team remained focused on improving our quality systems, completed the critical aspects of design, built the vehicle, completed 80 days of flight testing, delivered 150 technical documents, and successfully passed the FAA audit, Colburn said. This is a major accomplishment that builds momentum in executing our mission to deliver the world's first practical flying car. powered by a 100 horsepower Rotax 912IS sport fuel injected engine, the Transition has a maximum flight speed of 100 miles an hour, as we've said, and a range of about 400 miles with an altitude of 10,000 feet. The plane engine can run on either premium gasoline or aircraft fuel, while the car is powered by a hybrid electric motor. Standard features include four-wheel hydraulic disc brakes, a rigid carbon fibre safety cage, I'd hope you wouldn't need that, and an airframe parachute. The vehicle weighs roughly 1,300 pounds, that's in the old speak, and has a fixed landing gear and a 27-foot wingspan. The wings actually fold up to allow easy storage in a single car garage. Terrafugia envisions owners landing their Transition at a small airport or a stretch of highway, then driving it home. That differs from flying cars prototypes developed by Uber, Kitty Hawk, BMW and others, which involve the vehicles taking up commercial airspace. The vehicle converts from flying to driving in under a minute, according to Terrafugia. In 2018, the two-seat Transition was priced at $400,000. Terrafugia is developing several models of a flying car, including the four-person TFX, a four-seat hybrid electric with vertical takeoff and landing capabilities. The TFX is slated to be semi-autonomous, with computer controls that will allow passengers to simply type in the destination. It'll be capable of automatically avoiding air traffic, bad weather, and restricted airspace. Terrafugia was acquired by the Chinese-owned Geely, the parent company of Volvo, in 2017. So there we have it, folks. Something else we'll have to look out for when we're crossing the road or looking up in the sky. Heaven help us all. This was published by the Daily Mail in February 2021 this year and was written by Dan Avery. Boy, if you had one of those, you certainly would be over the hills and far away. That song was called Over the Hills and Far Away by the great leaden airship of the 70s, Led Zeppelin. But we move on to the Sydney Morning Herald and Charlie Bullis from Drive.com on, again, February this year. The breakthrough that could reduce the cost and size of Lydia systems for autonomous vehicles. Righto, Charlie, what's this all about? Scientists in the UK have developed a new low-cost Lydia prototype aimed at improving the performance of 3D mapping technology while reducing the size and cost for widespread commercial use. Researchers at the University of Southampton Optoelectronic Research Centre, or ORC for short, and US-based 3D technology Point Cloud Incorporated collaborated on the new integrated system, which uses a silicon chip to create high-performance 3D images for use in autonomous navigation systems. Used by self-driving cars to take 3D images of the surroundings, Lydia technology acts like the eyes of a vehicle, sending out thousands of laser light pulses per second to scan and detect objects around it, and calculating how far away objects are and if they are moving. Automakers like General Motors and Toyota already make use of Lydia in self-driving systems, with Apple announcing it will also use the technology in its Apple-branded car, it's an iCar, expected in 2024. Really, I don't know what it's going to be called, but I'd have that as a good guess. But other car manufacturers have criticised the cost and accuracy of Lydia, with Tesla CEO Elon Musk, remember him from last week, calling it a fool's errand in 2019. For context, the industry-leading system by Lydia manufacturer Velodyne, which sees 360 degrees with 300-metre range, costs around US$75,000 a piece. Buying it in bulk would likely reduce the cost for car makers, but still makes it a prohibitively expensive piece for widespread rollout of Lydia in consumer vehicles. However, competitors are attempting to drive down the price, with Lydia manufacturer Luminar announcing its plan to develop production-ready Lydia systems last year, costing as little as $500 US. With the new prototype claims to reduce the cost of the technology, further details as to how much are yet to be confirmed. What we do know is the latest trends and tests of the new silicon chip show an accuracy of 3.1 millimetres at a distance of 75 metres, which project scientists say is a higher accuracy than previously available. The silicon photogenics system we have developed provides much higher accuracy at distance compared to other chip-based Lydia systems to date. Or LiDAR systems, they are actually, to date. And most mechanical versions showing the much sought-after integrated system for LiDAR is viable, said ORC Professor Graham Reed. LiDAR has been promising a lot, but has always delivered on its potential in recent years, because, although experts have recognised that integrated vision can scale down cost, the necessary performance has not been there until now. The density of pixels currently in integrated systems has also been addressed, with a prototype increasing the density to 512 pixels, using a large-scale 2D detector, compared to 20 pixels in previous systems. The system teams are now looking to build and further improve the pixel density and beam technology to make the system better suited to real-world applications and improve performance. Thank you to Charlie Bullis and the Sydney Morning Herald motoring column Drive.com from February of this year. And because Charlie is such a good bloke, we'll stick with him for another from drive.com.au, and this is all about women's car clubs, a celebration to mark the recently passed World Women's Day. And in celebration of the 110th International Women's Day, we look at car clubs around Australia, bringing car-loving women together. Well, we couldn't let this go by without a thorough airing, so here it is. Ooh, the first one, Old Girls on the Road Club. Born from a birthday celebration for her beloved Ford Mark II Cortina, Tracy Walker launched the Old Girls on the Road Club, a creative project documenting classic car ownership amongst women. With more than 100 female owners in their database, Tracy and the photographer Rachel Baskerville interview women and their classic machines for their calendar and YouTube series. Members' cars range from muscle cars to Morris Minors, with the club hosting girly runs, but insists it's far from a bloke-free zone, with men welcome to accompany their partners, and 31% of the club's Facebook followers are male. Tracy said about the club, "The way I see it, the club provides a platform for like-minded women, obviously with a common interest in classic cars. Far from being about gender politics, it's a very social club. We enjoy getting together." The next one we look at is called The Car Girls of Canberra. Motoring enthusiasts Maddie Price and Casey Oslin co-founded Car Girls of Canberra. Sounds like a movie, doesn't it? And in just a few months have attracted over 250 members. Hosting special meetups around Canberra and featuring fellow car-loving girls on their social media pages. The club aims to bring female car enthusiasts into the ACT to meet take photos, and be part of something a little different. So we started with the car that ate Paris, and now we've got the car girls of Canberra. Great stuff. Next we've got the Track Day Club, the Women's PACE, that's P-A-C-E in capitals, PACE project. Wanting to ensure track days and motorsport were accessible and more welcoming for women, the Women's PACE project focuses on the confidence, skills and mindset both on and off the track. Featuring guest driver coaches Emily Duggan and Charlotte Poynting, the five-day event is set to kick off in May 2021 at Wakefield Park Raceway in Goulburn. The next one is the Car Garage. The Girls Garage Car Club. With members in Sydney, this girls-only car club for proud female car owners and women in the automotive industry, featuring members' cars on their Instagram page and Facebook group. Women can organise meetups, swap tips and get their hands on some personalised Girls Garage merchandise. Oh, how about this one? Race Chicks Race School. Race Chicks Race School is a motorsport development course created for women, by women. Track day novices can learn the fundamentals of participating in motorsport and have some fun on a wet skid pan too. Currently held at Sydney Motorsport Park, the course is set to roll out nationally from 2021. Yeah, the girls, 4x4. This is a community for Australian and New Zealand four-wheel base drive women. The Yeah, the Girls 4x4 Club has more than 24,000 followers on Instagram and hosts beginner's days to help women new to off-road adventures learn new skills and so they can tackle the tracks with confidence. With chapters in every Australian state, the group has now more than 5,000 members. That's a really good idea, I think. I'll teach the blokes a thing or two how to drive four-wheel drives around the place. More so in the city than on the wild or in the wild. Founder Kate Anderson says about the club, "Often I'd find myself out in the four-wheel drive community amongst males craving female interaction and friendship." YTG 4x4 started with an Instagram page in 2016 where I found like-minded women also wanting to get out bush and explore the 4x4 tracks. This was the beginning of a network of women coming together to celebrate female four-wheel driving. And that was great. I think that's just fantastic. And I guess if you Google or you look at YouTube, you will find these various organisations listed and you can get in there and get amongst it. Thanks to Charlie Bullis, again from the Sydney Morning Herald Drive, from February this year. Great women's music by the late, great Nicolette Larson. And now we move to the Australian. For February, February 6, 7, 2021, and John Connolly's piece in Bond and Mad Max, the wheel heroes of the films are the daredevil drivers. They say that Mundi Mundi, lookout near Broken Hill, is on the edge of the world. I've been there a few times, and it is. In fact, at sunset, it's as close to heaven, if heaven has emus, as you'll get. But very early one Saturday morning, 40 years ago, truck driver and sometimes big rig salesperson Dennis Williams wasn't looking at the view. As film critic and author of the extraordinary book Miller and Max, Luke Buckmeister says, Williams is shitting himself. Dennis is sitting in for Mel Gibson behind the wheel of a Mack R600 Cool Power, cleverly disguised as a tanker, which is about to crash into a truck-like vehicle called the Humongous Machine at about 1,000,000 kilometres an hour. Destroy it, turn it over a bank, and put the tanker onto its side and slide towards the cameras. What could possibly go wrong? Miller's co-writer Terry Hayes explains the job to Den. We're going to take the truck side-strike the humongous vehicle, wobble, wobble, then hit the bank. Mel and the kid who's with him will jump out and run away. But mate, if we have a good head-on collision, then you roll the truck over for us, that'd look even better. Den replied, Terry, I'm going to be doing 100 kilometres an hour down a hill into a right-hand bend, then over a 12-foot bank. You say roll it on its side and slide it? Mate, just because it's got air brakes doesn't mean we can stop in mid-air. Once it's gone, it's got a mind of its own. Den has reasons to be nervous. This is his first stunt. Up to this point, he's been a mild-mannered employee of Kenworth and one of their dealerships in Sydney. And if it works, it'll be one of the greatest truck crashes in movie history. Den chickened out near the end of the run. That was lucky, because the crew weren't ready, so he just prepared and stopped on purpose. Then, back up the top of the hill, he gunned it. You can see the result on YouTube. Probably not for any kiddies under the age of 37. Den later told the ABC, we built a huge rolled cage and had an ambulance on standby and a chopper on standby, and I hadn't eaten for 24 hours so they could operate, which sort of freaked me out just a little bit. Well, in case they had to operate. Anyway, Den survived. The film grossed $35 million and the truck driver was inducted into the Road Transport Hall of Fame in Alice. In a world of carefully choreographed first stunts, for good reasons, i.e. avoiding bankruptcy, Den's work in Mad Max 2 was a road warrior is a standout. But before Den, there was Remy Julian. Remy died this week from that bloody COVID-19, aged 90. While he talked about his work as science rather than stunts, his work behind the wheel of a Kenworth W900 in License to Kill was all him. Here's the plot. Frank Sanchez is a Mexican drug lord who transports coke in Kenworths, cleverly disguised even, as petrol tankers. Jimmy Bond, cleverly disguised as Tim Dalton, a poor imitation of Sean Connery, leaps out of a Cessna, piloted by an attractive, short-haired person in a dress, and lands on top of the trailer while Frank fires a machine gun at him from a Maserati B Turbo. There's your first clue. If Frank is too cheap to spend his ill-gotten gains on a Ferrari, then he deserves to die at the hands of Jim. And Jim's silver Dunhill lighter on eBay for around $400. He climbs into the cabin, sprays the current driver with foam, and takes over the wheel. To cut 5 minutes, 40 seconds into a few words, in another racist stereotype, another Mexican fires a Stinger missile at Jim and the Kenworth, but Jim, really, Remy Julian, puts the 18-wheeler up on its side, 9 wheels for 23 seconds, and evades the baddies. Now, this is not CGI or any other fake effect. The former French motocross champion turned professional stunt person actually drove the all-American monster on its side for 23 seconds. Remy's dad was a small-town cafe owner and truck driver. A shy boy, Remy found he could get kids to talk to him by doing stunts on his bicycle. Then he progressed to his father's 1,000cc motorbike. He became a truck and military truck driver. At the age of 27, was French motocross champion. Gil Dirami took an interest in him, Long story short, Gilles from a noble French family, but sensibly ran away. Joined the circus and got into stunt and special effects driving. In 1964, Gilles gave Remy a small stunt role. Before you could say bonjour, Remy has made over 1,400 movies and been stunt doubles for Roger Moore, Tim Dalton, Charles Bronson, Alain Delon, Jean-Paul Belmondo, Sophia Loren, Caroline Bouget, Gina Lollobrigida, wearing wigs and dresses, but there's nothing to worry about with that. Some of my best friends, etc., etc. Out of all those movies, my favourite, of course, was The Italian Job. It was Remy who came up with the idea for an 18-metre rooftop jump between two buildings, 15 metres above the Fiat factory ground. Fiat owner Gianni Agnelli let the production use the factory, but even though it was on private property, according to the Italian Job blog, local law meant producer Michael Dealey was still solely responsible if anything went wrong. Remy recalls, apparently he had a car waiting outside and a plane at the airport. He figured that he could argue his case from the UK if anything went pear-shaped. With everybody ready, the weather clearing, a truck full of polystyrene placed between two buildings 50 feet below, it was all go. Many of the onlookers touched Virgin Marys and crosses hanging around their necks. Then Remy in the red Cooper put his foot down, closely followed by the white and the blue Coopers. They left the roof at just under 115 kilometres an hour, and on landing, one Cooper broke its suspension and one its engine. In the film, you can see the smoking engine as it hits on landing. Remy was a true petrolhead. He was one of a kind. As he said, what is beautiful about the job is that you can never be 100% certain. If you could, then frankly, it wouldn't be interesting. You have to know that there's always a chance you could cop it. Jiminy crickets. Okay, well, there we go. In Bond and Mad Max, the wheel hero, a W-H-E-E-L, wheel heroes of the films are the daredevil drivers. And that was from John Connolly, Weekend Australian, on the 6th, 7th of February this year. And that, as they say in the movie business, is a wrap. Thanks for your company this week. We've been all over the place, flying cars, flying minis, the Italian Job. Hey, some great stuff. I look forward to your company next week, when, as usual, we'll talk about something completely different. Until then, Richard Lyon, 30 Laps with Dick. Bye for now.